this morning is week four, so to speak, of a five-week course, in the sense that, as I told Nancy when we planned this in the first place, I had a feeling that we weren't going to get through all five topics. So, you know, feelings can be correct. We are not getting through all five topics. Miriam's rebuke will have to be saved for another time. And instead, this week we are focusing on, as I titled it at the top of your page, Leia the Hated? Question mark. And this is a very difficult relationship that we're going to look at, the relationship between Yaakov, Jacob, and his wife, Leia. And as always, what we want to do here is learn about our matriarchs, but also learn about how Midrash works and some of its methods and what we're meant to do with it. So what we have here is going to be actually a fairly brief Midrash in its own right, or set of Midrashim, as you'll see. But there's quite a bit to say. The questions we want to look at are, how do we look at the deception of Jacob, in which Leah ends up marrying Jacob when he thought he was marrying her sister? And we'll go through the story briefly to make sure everyone's up to speed on that. But how do we look at that deception, much the way that last week we looked at the question of how we looked at Rachel's taking of the truppin that belongs to her father? And before that, we looked at Rebecca and the swapping of the blessings. So that, I guess you could see it sort of as our theme, this issue of deception. But how do we look at this in terms of Leah's conduct, and how did Leah look at her own deception? So we begin once again with the table at the top of the sheet under background. Yeah. Okay. But now I need one. Just keep one. Oh, there it is. Okay. Thank you. We begin once again with the table, which gives us the genealogy. Abraham and Nahor are brothers. They marry Sarah and Milcah, who are sisters. We discussed that in the first week in terms of that relationship. Abraham and Sarah have a son, Isaac. Nahor and Milcah have a granddaughter, Rebecca. Isaac marries Rebecca. Remember, Sarah and Abraham are very old when they have Isaac. That's the skewing of the generations there. So Isaac marries Rebecca. And Isaac and Rebecca have twin sons, Esav and Yaakov, Esav and Jacob. Rebecca has a brother named Laban or Laban. Laban has two daughters, Leah and Rachel. And Jacob will end up marrying both Rachel and Leah. And as we noted last week already, they are related in a whole bunch of ways. Right? The relationship between them, we decided, was that Leah is Jacob's cousin in two different ways. Right? She is his second cousin once removed, right, through Abraham and Sarah. Right, his second cousin once removed through Abraham and Nahor and their relationship, but he's also her first cousin. Is it first cousin straight? That works? Yeah, first cousin straight. I made the table and I still don't know. But that's the relationship. They are also first cousins. Leah is the older of the two sisters. We generally assume they are not twins. She is just the older one. And the story which is given to us in Genesis chapter 29 is a story of deceptive marriage in which Jacob doesn't realize he's marrying her. And that takes us right into source number one. Jacob came to Laban's house. He fell in love, we're told, with Rachel right at the outset, right when he met her at the well. He already loves her. Love at first sight. And he works first for Laban for a while. Laban says, you know, I have to reward you for what you're doing for me. And Jacob says, I would like to marry your daughter Rachel. I will work for you for 7 years in order to marry your daughter Rachel. And that's where we come in. In source number one, the introduction to these two daughters, Ulavan Shtevanot in the Hebrew. And Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And the eyes of Leah were soft, and Leah was of pretty features and pretty appearance. Rachel. Oops. Mistake in my translation. That should say Rachel. That's a fairly big mistake. But then again, Laban did the same thing. So Rachel, thank you, was of pretty features and pretty appearance. And Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, I will work for you for 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. See, once again, by the way, that's the risks of translation. You never know what's going to creep in. So Jacob loves Rachel, and he is willing to work for Laban for 7 years in order to marry her. Notice the wording when he asks to marry Rachel, right? In the Hebrew, it's Rachel, Rachel, Bitcha, your daughter, Hakitana, the younger one. In today's Hebrew, in Israel today, sometimes you enter into an agreement with somebody and you want to say, I'm being very specific and outlining all the details, you say, Rachel Bitcha Ketana. That's the way you phrase it. As in, I am making every last point specific and clear, lest there be any confusion. And of course, that's ironic because, you know, we know what's going to happen despite his care in making everything clear. And that's source number two. Vayesof Laban, and Laban gathered all of the local people, and he made a feast. And that evening, and he took his daughter Leah, and he brought her to Jacob, and he came to her. And Laban gave her his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. And it was in the morning, and behold, she was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this that you have done to me? Did I not work with you for Rachel? Why have you deceived me? And Laban said, thus shall not be done in our place to give the younger before the elder. You heathen. Complete this week, and we will give you also this one. Nice. This one. For the work you shall do with me for another 7 years. Oh, boy. There are a lot of questions to be asked about this paragraph. Go ahead, throw out some questions.
What deception right from the beginning, because if he knew he was going to give him the youngest child, he should have specified that.
Well, for sure, the question of what in the world has Laban doing, I mean, the answer is he's being very shrewd, because he just got 7 other years of labor out of this deal. But he absolutely gets away with it.
And also he's treating his daughters like chattel.
He's treating them like chattel, absolutely. And that's something that's going to come back to bite him later on. We'll see. That's going to come back to bite him, the way he treats them. What else?
How come he didn't discover until the morning that it was gone?
Yeah. The text makes a point, Fran says. The text makes a point of saying, and it was in the morning, and behold, she was Leah. How in the world did she get away with this until then? So there's a fascinating midrash where the rabbis actually pick up on this, and they suggest that since we see Jacob say, Rachel, your daughter, your youngest daughter, and since there is a family history with Laban, going back to the previous marriage, to the marriage of Isaac and Rebekah, where he is known as somebody who is greedy and who tries to pull a fast one, sure, you can take Rebekah back to the family. Oh, wait, maybe we should wait 10 months. Maybe I need a better deal, right? We already know who Laban is. They suggest that Jacob actually thought this was coming down the pike. And that's why he specified what he did, and therefore he and Rachel actually had set up signs between them. They had signs. He was going to say one thing and she would respond because he suspected this was going to happen, and that as the Midrash tells it, Rachel gives the signs to Leah. So that in the dark at night, Jacob doesn't know what's going on, and it's only in the morning that he discovers, lo and behold, it's actually Rachel. There's a lot to say about that midrash. Oh, actually, Leah, thank you. There's a lot to say about that midrash. But but what that midrash is picking up on is the fact that it says, behold, in the morning it was Leah. Why did it take so long for you to figure it out? The answer is because Rachel actually gave the signs, according to this explanation, Shana.
Don't Rachel and Leah have something to say about this? Even if Laban is pulling the strings, there's going to come a moment where it's a woman under the canopy and she's going to say, can't you say it's me or it's not me?
Right. So that is the big question, is how does Leah go along with this?
She's a chattel.
But chattel or not a chattel, we're going to see more about this. How does Leah go along with this is something that's what I want to focus on.
So
that's one piece of it, is that she wants to marry him, but we're going to see even more than that. What we're going to see here in this story is really remarkable. There's a lot more that we're going to see. Ruchama, and then I'll come back to this.
How does Rachel go along?
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear what she said.
One second. I heard that question also. I'll take this one first. How does Rachel go along with it? I think that's what that midrash is asking. The midrash that says, well, how did he wait till the morning, is also asking the question of how is it that Rachel does this? And the answer it's saying, is suggesting, is that Rachel doesn't want to embarrass Leah. She doesn't want Leah to be humiliated, and therefore she's willing to do this. Very hard to imagine.
Why that?
Okay.
Very hard to... Well...
I just might have loved each other a lot and wanted to, so that she would tell her, not that it
is. Tell her what?
Tell her what's happened. She would know that it's not her, and she would tell her sister. Look,
oh, but they both know it's not. They both know it's not. Rachel and Leah both know this is a lie. Leah knows that he's supposed to be marrying Rachel. That becomes very clear in the story.
So Rachel doesn't tell Jacob.
Correct. She doesn't tell Jacob. She says, "I even though it's hard to imagine, the truth of the matter is that it happens every single day that people put literally their lives on the line for each other. You can imagine two sisters, and one of them loves the other, and Rachel saying, I'm not going to, yes, I fell in love with him at the well, but I'm not going to do this to her. You can, that piece of it, I can't imagine. Are you suggesting that men and women think differently? I live in an egalitarian age. Ruhama, yes.
It's connected with this. It's a that from Yaakov's point of view, when he came there, he thought, well, I'm running away there, I will find a ferry, and he thought that he's from his point of view, he was cheated not only by Laban and not only by Leah, but also by his love. By Rachel,
yep.
And how can he take it? Being cheated by this is his new family that he expected to.
Right.
He's alone.
So Ruhama points out this has to have emotional fallout for Jacob too. He's been deceived by everybody. Right? In every which way. So we're going to have to talk about the impact on him. We're not going to see everything about the impact on him, but that's also going to have to be part of what we discuss. Nancy. And then.
I want to go back to the first quotation, the source about the two daughters.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about Leah's eyes.
Mm.
Two things. Physically, and does it suggest anything in her character? And why did you translate it soft rather than weak?
Good. All very good questions. The word in the Hebrew for Leah's eyes is that they are rakot. Rach means soft. So the question is, what does that mean when you describe someone's eyes as soft? What are you saying about the eyes? So the Midrash is going to pick up on it and suggest that it's about crying. That's one idea. I have seen some render it in the English as weak. They're trying to find something to work with, but we're going to have
because
to come back to
it. Means tired in Hebrew.
Right. Correct.
So it means tired.
Right.
So it's not only that it's soft and she was crying, but she is not really.
Well, there's more to be said, so I'm going to come back to the question of her eyes. Yes.
I think it's part of the quote. It's sort of far, sounds far-fetched, but it sort of echoes the Ahidah.
I'll repeat it.
Sorry, it echoes the Ahidah.
In the sense that?
In the sense that, A, she could be testing him to see if he would still love her if she did this, and if she would accept the family and the values and
oh, boy.
What she did.
We'll test him by having him marry my sister. That's brutal. This is a tough neighborhood. But you know what? It's totally in line with what they do. Like, that's her family right there.
Yeah.
It's an interesting idea. The suggestion is maybe this is a test of Jacob. Like, let's see just how much he loves me. I don't know. But it's an interesting idea given where she's coming from.
And the other thing is, in a way, she's savage. Isaac doesn't sacrifice him, but he allows his father to do it. And she's sacrificing her place for happily ever after, the princess, the only one.
Or she thinks she is, anyway. She thinks she's sacrificing.
Maybe.
Yes, correct.
Elaine. Yes.
Where he says that he asked him to just complete the week, is is this like the wedding week?
Right. So that's something I commented on, I think, last week. But I thank you for bringing it up. Not everyone here was here last week. That yes, this is where we get our practice. This is the earliest appearance of our practice of Sheva Brachot. The idea of 7 days that are just for her, we link it to this 7-day period in between, and we don't mix the celebrations. Thank you for pointing it out. I'm actually going to go a little further. I know I see more hands, but there, you know, there's a lot to be said, and we don't have a next week to rely on. So that's the marriage. The deception is then revealed, and then you get source number 3, right after source number 2 in the Torah. And Jacob did this, and he completed that week. And Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to him as a wife. And Laban gave his daughter Rachel, his maid Bilhah, to her as a maid. Oh, you know what? I skipped one important question. On the previous source, why did he gather the entire local population?
Because he's playing with the Yom Kippur. He makes a drinking party.
But if you want to trick somebody, how many witnesses do you want? And how much of our... think about it. What if somebody at the party says to Jacob, oh, what a beautiful bride. You are so lucky that you're going to get to marry Leah. Innocently, you know, just saying that, not knowing the game.
She's coming.
No, someone says it.
Isn't there a midrash that they go, they're saying, he Leah.
Yes, there is. So there's a midrash that suggests they're actually playing games with him. And that exists. But I think it's an important question. Well, you know, perhaps the answer is that he's doing it to avoid raising suspicion. In other words, if Laban doesn't invite the entire city, Jacob's going to wonder what's going on. So that may be why. Perhaps it's because he wants everybody there so that Jacob can't back out afterwards. You married her in front of the entire city. But there's a midrash that suggests that they were complicit. And it's the same midrash, it's just a line earlier than the one that that Diane was quoting. The midrash suggests that everybody in the area has benefited from Jacob's presence. When you look at the biblical verses, it describes how Jacob brings plenty. And therefore, he actually, Laban recruits everybody and says, listen, I want him to stay here longer. So here's the plan. You're all going to be aware of this, but don't say anything to Jacob. That's the, it's another read, but it's all based on this logical question of why in the world did you invite the whole city? If you were planning on a scam, you don't want people to be there. So there are all sorts of possible explanations, just pointing that out.
Isn't there another reason for inviting the whole city? This way, nobody has an opportunity to find out about the scam. They're all at the wedding.
Why would how would someone who's not at the wedding find out about the scam?
Well, if somebody was there, they might notice that Rachel isn't the bride.
No, but if somebody isn't at the wedding,
they may see that what's going on isn't right. This way, they're all there. They're all participating.
I'm not sure how that would work. They're all there to see it.
Rachel at the wedding, too. Yeah. Is Rachel covered up also?
I would guess she would have to be. Because yeah. Otherwise Jacob's going to see her and say, wait, why aren't you under the chuppah, so to speak? Let's see number 3. So Jacob did this. He completed the week. Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to him as a wife. And Laban gave his daughter Rachel his maid Bilhah to her as a maid. And he also came to Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah. There you go. And he worked for Laban for another 7 years. Parenthetically, at other sessions, in other series, we've talked about biblical polygamy. So the short story, the biblical text does not prohibit polygamy for one very simple reason. What is the very first imperative that God gives to humanity? Be fruitful and multiply, right? Bear fruit and multiply. The easiest way to multiply is if it is one male and multiple females. If it's polyandry, where there are multiple men to one wife, then you've locked up all of the fertilizers, so to speak, for her period of pregnancy and then nursing. And in those days, you nurse for the first 2 or 3 years, as the biblical text testifies. So therefore, you would lock up all of your males for that period. Better to arrange it so that there are multiple wives to the one man, and therefore it wasn't prohibited. However, the biblical text does everything it possibly can to discourage polygamy. There are many cases of polygamy in the Bible. There is not a single case of happy polygamy. We have all sorts of disasters, beginning to end. You go back to Lamech and his wives Ada and Sila in the very beginning. You continue with Abraham and Sarah and Hagar. You continue with Jacob and the two wives. You just read about it right here. He loved Rachel more than Leah, which he had other reasons for. But again, having multiple wives, it doesn't work fundamentally. So that by the time you reach Talmudic times, nobody is doing it. Long before Rabbeinu Gershom comes around in the 10th century and formalizes it as a decree for Ashkenazi Jews not to marry more than one wife, it's long before they've already stopped doing it anyway, because it's a bad idea. Sephardic Jews, not under Rabbeinu Gershom, in some lands did indeed continue it, like the people among whom they lived. It was part of society. But I suspect it was no happier there. Realistically, it's not everything that the Torah permits you to do is a good idea. There are things which you may be allowed to do, but really aren't smart. And you know, yeah, this is one of them. Shana.
Just by way of buttressing your argument, the Hebrew word that they use for the co-wife.
Yes.
Sarah.
Yeah.
Right,
Sarah, or in English, the best English translation would be a rival, I think, probably. But yes, it doesn't work. So here it is not working. He loved also Rachel more than Leah, and he worked for Laban for another 7 years. He loves Rachel more than Leah. We can expect that Leah is not going to deal with this well, but it gets worse. The next verse, source number 4, I broke these out, but they're really all in sequence. You can see the verse numbers that I'm giving you here. So, source number 4, and God saw that Leah was hated. The word in Hebrew, sinu'ah. We're going to come back to that word. Leah was hated, and he opened her womb. And Rachel was childless. Now, hated is a very strong word. Why would he hate her? Especially if we view her as chattel, if we say that, well, she did this because her father put her into it and she didn't have a choice, why would he hate her?
Because he was deceived.
Okay, he was deceived, but again, if we're going to view her as just being manipulated by her father,
yeah, but still,
hate?
Emotionally, he understood it intellectually, but he still emotionally, she deceived him.
And yet he stays married to her.
Maybe it was Rachel who hated.
Maybe it was Rachel what?
Who hated her.
We don't see that. It says that Jacob did.
It just says that she was.
Ah, that's interesting.
It doesn't say by whom.
That's very funny. You're right. I never thought about it that way. It just says that she was hated.
You just said they loved each other.
And actually, what you are saying is going to fit in very well with one of the midrashim that we're going to see. So hold that thought. Very good. What else?
Is that the only translation of the word hatred?
Ah, so that's another question. Does the word snuah have to mean hated? And the answer is no, it doesn't have to mean that. It could be a little less strong. It's still not great. There is a passage in Devarim, in Deuteronomy, chapter 21, sentence 15, which speaks of inheritance issues. In a case of polygamy, in which there is more than one wife, and one of them is the, so to speak, preferred over the other. And what they say is, you're not allowed to warp the order of inheritance to favor the children of the one who is more beloved. And the text there calls one ahuva, right? Like ahava, love, beloved. And the other one, I'll pass it to the proof. And the other one, sinuah, which, again, is the same word as we're seeing here, but there it's understood that it doesn't refer to hatred as much as it simply refers to the one who is not favored compared to the other. So you could read snua as not being hatred, but it's still not, it's never going to be a positive.
Yeah, so it is exactly like the opposite of, since it's written that the Yaakov loved Rachel, so the opposite of love is snua.
Right. Yeah, no, it's true. It doesn't have to be so. It could have said not loved or something. It's a very strong word, and the midrash that we're going to see is going to take it as it's written. It's going to take snuat to mean hated, and the central question that we're going to have to address is, does Jacob hate Leah? That's really what we have to go through here, is this question. So the Midrash is going to pick up on oddities in these sentences. The Midrashim that we're going to read are going to pick up on a few quirks here. First of all, fitting in with Sheila's point that it doesn't say Jacob hated her, it says that she is hated. But also, go back to chapter 29, sentence 30, in source number 3, it said he loved Rachel more than Leah. That's not the same thing as hating Leah at all. Right? There is affection, it's just not as much as there is for Rachel. Yes?
Someone erased my friend here. Her womb was opened.
Yes.
There's got to be something that's light.
Well, God didn't allow her to have children.
Allow her to have children.
Correct. Correct. He's not avoiding her, is what you're trying to say. He's not avoiding her. And we also have to ask the connection. It's, you know, one statement leads to the next. Leah is hated and he opened her womb. There must be some kind of a connection. Why are they side by side in the verse? Nancy, and then?
It seems that God has intervened in favor of Leah.
Mm-hmm.
And, but not certainly favor of Rachel at this point.
Right, Nancy says that God seems to be intervening in favor of Leah and not in favor of Rachel. So it appears, that's for sure.
Trying to compensate.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like sympathy. Stephen.
Also, she was the only one from the matriarch, so it's not very.
Right, she's the only one of all the matriarchs who gives birth right away. Meaning that Sarah has this problem for decades in which she ends up giving Hagar to her husband, Rebecca 20 years before she has a child. And then Rachel here also is childless while, you know, her sister it just keeps on generating babies. If you remember how the family works, Leah's gonna have four kids, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Then Rachel in desperation is gonna give her maid, Bilhah, to Jacob. Bilhah's going to have two kids. Leah's going to say, what a good idea. She's going to give her maid to Jacob. And her maid, Zilpah, is going to have two more kids, right? That brings our total to eight now. Leah is then going to have two more kids, two more boys, and Dinah. And only then is Rachel going to have her first, Joseph. And then she's going to die while giving birth to Binyamin. So all through this time, Rachel is watching everybody else have kids, and she has none. So there is a statement. There's something going on here. But yes, Leah is very much the exception to the rule among the matriarchs. Stephen.
And it doesn't say, and God saw that Leah was hated by Jacob. It doesn't say that.
No, it doesn't say it, as Sheila pointed out.
What it's saying is, God saw that Leah was disliked by Rachel. Right. And that the evidence is in the verse before that, where it says that Jacob loved Rachel more than Leah. So Rachel, because of her dislike for her sister, Rachel disliked Leah.
So you're suggesting that it's Rachel who
disliked Leah, and because of that, in order for...
He doesn't. This is Stephen. No, what Stephen is suggesting is, since the text doesn't say Jacob hated her, maybe it's actually meant to imply that Rachel hates her.
You said they loved each other, the two sisters.
And we're going to see... We're going to see more about this, and we'll see how it interacts with what Stephen is suggesting. Don't discard what he's saying, because there's a key interaction coming down the pike that I think is going to influence the way you look at them. So let's hold the thought as we go forward. So the Midrash picks up on a few things. It picks up on the fact that we were told that he loved Rachel more than Leah. That's not the same as hating. It picks up on the fact that it doesn't say Jacob hated Leah. It says she was hated. That's the second question. A third question it's picking up on is, how can you fault Leah if she is under her father's control? Take a look now at source number 5. This is what I was referring to when people asked about them being chattel. I mentioned already last week, when Jacob feels that he is in danger from Laban and his family, he says, we got to get out of Dodge. We have to run away. But he doesn't simply run away. he calls Rachel and Leah, and they go out to the field together, from which the Talmud learns a lesson, which is the walls have ears. Make sure that you go far away. I'm not kidding. That's the Talmud statement there. And so they go out into the field, and Jacob says to her, you know, I'm worried. I see that they're not as affectionate towards me, the family, as they used to be. God has already told me that he's protecting me. It's time to go. What do you think? And they respond in source number 5. He asks them for permission. This is my response to people who I talked about them being a chattel, you know, and so forth already in previous weeks, is the fact that he doesn't go on his own. Look what they say. And Rachel and Leah answered, and they said to him, "Do we have a share and portion in our father's house anymore? He thinks of us as strangers, for he has sold us." Right? Literally, he sold them. Right? 7 years for this one, 7 years for that one. And he has also eaten our money. Because we have, you know, we've been producing, you've been working for him all this time, and he is taking the proceeds. For all of the wealth that God has saved from our father belongs to us and to our children. Now, meaning the reward, the payment that Jacob has been trying to arrange. Now, do all that God has told you. Whatever God said to do, this is what you should do. Well, if they really are under their father's control, if they were sold by him and so forth, then how can you fault Leah? And then one more point, a logical point. Take a look at source number 6. And that is about the text itself. The text, the Hebrew's on the bottom, the English is on the top of the next side. The text itself told us Leah was hated. Did it really need to say that? You had to go tell everybody that Leah was hated in the Bible, right? Best read book of all time. We need to put in there that Leah was hated, as the Talmud asks. And God saw that Leah was hated. What is hated? If it means hated literally, could that be? Regarding non-kosher animals, Genesis chapter 7, sentence 8 did not speak of their disgrace. And what it means by that is that the word used for non-kosher creatures is an animal that is tameh. Tameh means contaminated. However, the text, when it describes them in their initial appearance biblically, doesn't call them tameh. It says lo tahor, which means not pure. Instead of saying contaminated, it says not pure. So the Talmud deduces from there that God is trying to spare them the indignity of being called contaminated, even though it's going to use the word contaminated a whole bunch of times in the rest of the Torah. Nonetheless, at some point, it goes out of its way to speak politely of them. And so the Talmud says, if you don't want to call the animal contaminated, instead you say not pure. Would the text then speak of a disgrace of the righteous? How can you say, oh, her husband hated her? Rather, and here the Talmud gives an answer, God saw that the deeds of Esav were hateful in her eyes. Snuah, not meaning that she was hated, but rather she hated Esav. What in the world does this have to do with Esav? Where did Esav get into this picture? Hold the question, we'll find out in a moment. And how that led to when he opened her womb is also part of this. Part of this. So the Midrash, we're going to see not just one Midrash, but rather we're going to see three Midrashim, all of which are picking up on some or all of these questions and the textual nuances as well as the logical issues, and trying to provide some way to understand what's going on. First Midrash we're going to look at, all of these come from Bereishit Rabbah, which is what we've been using all along, one of the oldest canonized bodies of Midrash, going back about 1,800 years in terms of its first appearance in canonized form. And the ideas in it go back to sages who are earlier than that. And this Midrash is going to suggest she was sinuah, means this is the hardest play on words. This is the least grammatically close reading of the text. She was destined for the sanui, the sone, if you will, but really the sanui. She was destined for the hated one. Meaning, had she not married Jacob, she would have been married off instead to his brother Esav. Take a look at source number 7. that Leah was hated, the opening part of the line, for she acted like those who are hated. And what he means by that is explained different ways and different approaches. But what we're going to suggest here is that she did the manipulation. Like somebody who would be hated by people, she acted in this manipulative way. She said she was going to be wedded to the hateful one. For these were the conditions, that the elder should wed the elder, and the younger should wed the younger. She cried and said, "May it be God's will that I not fall to the portion of the wicked one." Why would she think she was supposed to marry Esav? It's not just that she's older than her sister. Why else?
Maybe she thought God hated her.
Go back to the first slide in our table. Look who keeps marrying whom.
The cousins.
Two brothers married two sisters. Then the son of one married the granddaughter of the other. Right? And then their kids are now showing up. This is the way it works in this family. They don't like the Chiti who are living in Canaan. That we've established. Right? The Canaan branch of the family doesn't like the locals. And they keep sending back to Aram to marry a girl from the family. Eli, the servant, when he was sent to go get a wife for Isaac, was told, get somebody from the family. The assumption is this is going to continue in the next generation. Exactly. Two sons here, two daughters there. Let's marry them off to each other. It's a very logical expectation. And she's the elder, so she's going to marry the older one. And so what this text is doing is it's saying, Jacob doesn't hate her. That's their first point. Rereading the text that says she was hated to suggest she is going to marry the hated one, and she acts as one who is hated by going along with this manipulation in order to get out of it. She was not then blamed, if you read it that way, and far from being shameful, it's considered a positive that she doesn't want to marry this terrible person, Esav. Who we, you know, why Esav is terrible is its own discussion in its own right. But that's the way this midrash is reading it, and it goes along with the midrash about her eyes being soft because she was crying. She's crying because she thinks she's going to marry Esav. Okay, that's one approach. So what we're seeing is that this is great, I can type in my notes at the same time. This midrash is taking it as a given that you can't find hatred between Jacob and Leah. That's this view. It's not willing to accept the idea that there is hatred here, and so we must find another way to read it. The second approach picks up on Sheila's point that it didn't specify Jacob as hating her. It said she was hated. And so it suggests there's somebody else who hates her. Take a look at source number 8. This is from the same paragraph in that midrash. You can see I have 71:2 for both of them. Rav Huna said, prayer is so strong that it cancels the evil decree. Right? We're familiar with from Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, right? Shuva Tefillah Tzedakah. Prayer cancels the evil decree. Not only this, but she even preceded her sister, meaning she prayed that she should not marry Esav, and lo and behold, it worked. You can pray for a Bashert. And all shamed her. The word in the Midrash originally is Sontin, which is a hard word to render. It doesn't appear in Tanakh. It's not a straight word. I found words in Greek and Latin that sort of seemed a little bit similar. Like you could read it. There's a word like it that means isolated in Latin. So it could be that she is being sort of ostracized as a result of this. But sailors shamed her. Wayfarers shamed her. The point is even people from far away heard what had happened. Even those who sat in wells behind the weaving boards shamed her. Everybody, everywhere, saying, this Leah is not the same in secret as she is in the open. She appears to be righteous, and she is not righteous. If she were righteous, she would not have plotted against her sister. So, Sinua does not mean hated by Jacob. It means hated by others. Once again, a midrash that's not willing to accept the idea that Jacob hates her, and that sees instead that she is blamed by others for what happened, and is not shameful because they don't know her. What do they know? They don't really understand the you know, what had happened. They didn't understand the gravity of potentially marrying Esav. The third explanation, though, is to me the one that's most fascinating. And that's source number 9. Bitsafra, in the morning, the text says, and behold, she was Leah. He said to her, plotter, daughter of a plotter. At night, did I not call Rachel and you answered me? This is what you've been wondering, right? I told you we were going to ask this. But this does not give the same answer. This is not just about how she pulled it off. This is what happens the next morning. She said to him, is there a teacher without students? Didn't your father similarly call to you Esav and you answered him? Right? You went in to get the blessing from your father. And your poor father, who couldn't see well, said, Hatazeh b'ni Esav. Are you my son Esav? And the text says, Vayomer ani. And he said, I, meaning I am.
She blackmailed
him. Not blackmailed him. She doesn't blackmail him. What does she do?
She uses it.
What she does is she shames him. Who are you to talk? You call me plotter, son of a plotter, as though you were new to deception. Yes?
How did she know this?
How would she not know this?
How does she know?
Yeah.
Does everybody know that he's still in custody?
The assumption is that everybody is aware of this.
He comes on the lam, a thief, and everybody knows it, and Laban wants to marry his daughter to this guy?
Leah thinks Inveya Geffen. These are the grapes from the vine.
Okay.
Huntsman.
Does everybody know that Jacob was the thief and it wasn't?
Well, again, from Jacob's perspective, it isn't theft. From Jacob's perspective. No. From Jacob's perspective, this is righting a wrong because Esav has deceived his father into thinking he's worthy. His mother, Rebecca, told him that this is what you're actually supposed to do. From Jacob's perspective, like from the perspective of many people who end up with that which was originally someone else's. But from Jacob's perspective, this is what he was supposed to have. His mother told him so. But Leah turns around and says, well, you know, daddy told me that I should marry you.
Okay.
You know, but this is an important psychological insight because this does explain then why Jacob would hate Leah, because no one likes to be called on it, right? No one likes it if somebody else says to them, remember what you did? And so what this midrash is suggesting, our first two midrashim said there's no hatred at all. Either it's talking about her hatred for Esav, or it's talking about popular hatred for Leah because people didn't understand. The third approach that we're seeing here says no. Jacob does. On some level, there is animosity because of the way she called him on what he did. That's the third level here. There are more levels in the Midrash. We have an hour to work with, but there's a lot more here. Sheila and then Nancy.
If he really loved Rachel much more,
yeah,
he could have punished Rachel by not having physical relations with her.
Right.
And having children with her.
Correct.
And shaming Rachel, who couldn't have children.
Correct. And this goes back to the difficulty of accepting that there was hatred between them. If there's really hatred, then how did they get all those kids? Right? The answer clearly seems to be that you know, in line with the first two midrashim, that whatever animosity is there is not a deep-seated hatred that's going to keep them apart. Maybe some resentment, but, you know, maybe that's the word, Stephen. Nancy, you were going to say?
I was thinking about the concept of measure for measure, one thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I seem to recall that when Laban and Jacob meet each other, Laban refers to Jacob as bone of my bone. Something about... which makes me think that...
No, I don't think so. No, what he does say... Yeah, please do. But what he does say is the sons are my sons, the daughters are my daughters, everything you see is mine. Which is, you know, the way Laban looks at the world. But I don't remember him saying that. The only thing I do remember him saying is, and how could I hurt any of them? You know, what would I do with... Well, how, How could I possibly hurt them? Those are different approaches to the fallout from this. But now let's go back to what we saw in source number 4, where we associated Leah being hated and the opening of her womb. Take a look, please, at source number 10, which is God's response to these different definitions of Sinuah. Rabbi Hanan cited Rabbi Shmuel, son of Rabbi Yitzchak. When our father Jacob saw the actions with which Leah plotted against her sister, he decided to divorce her. Meaning, he was ready. The next day, lo and behold, it turns out to be Leah. Jacob says, well, let me divorce her. Why should I stay with this woman who I married by mistake? But when God answered her with children, he said, well, I divorce the mother of these children. So clearly it's not the next day anymore, correct? It's at least 9 months later. But he meant, you know, once she's already pregnant, maybe, I don't know. But the idea is that God is safeguarding her position in the home. Once she has kids, he's not going to divorce her. And this takes us back to each of our three definitions of sinuah. Either she has created a righteous family by producing a child with Jacob, and therefore now she can't be sent back to wicked Esav, or everybody is hating her. Now she demonstrates that she is favored by God because she had children. And this is a whole other note which really deserves its own class, and maybe at some point we have to have a class on this topic. But remember that biblically, having children is a sign of divine approval. When Sarah does not have children, and she approaches Abraham to marry Hagar, she says, "Atzarani Hashem miledet." God has prevented me from having children. It is assumed that this is from God. And then when they have children, they say, "God has given me children." Ulayi banemi mena is that I'll be built up through her, right? But in general, it's a notion that having children is a demonstration of divine favor, and therefore it broadcasts to the world, those who look down on her are wrong. She's not hated. She didn't do a terrible thing, because look, God approved. And then last, and then I'll come to Moish and then Shana, is that it also tells Jacob that he was wrong. If you take the third view in the Midrash, that it's his animosity for her because she pulled off this deception, the answer is God approves. So if you have a problem, Jacob, don't take it up with her. Take it up with God. Moish.
I think that last point you made is really important. Because I want to suggest an entirely different story here.
Yeah.
I don't find the story as it is convincing as to what happened between Rachel and Leah.
Okay.
On the wedding night. I actually my whole question you asked last week as to who's active and who's passive here.
Yeah.
Yaakov seems to be totally passive with respect to having children.
Well, generally the husbands after the beginning are.
Not really, because they didn't start off with him being in love with Rachel. You'd expect something more than that.
What is that? What would you be looking for?
He really doesn't speak to them. I don't think there's actually, he doesn't speak to Leah at all. Period. I don't think there's a word killed that
right, so there are conversations between him and Rachel that are recorded.
Right.
I don't remember conversations to him and Leah, but you have to keep in mind, if you go back through the text in all of these generations, you find very little in terms of conversation with anybody recorded.
Right. I think that Rachel and Leah were in this together from the very beginning.
Yeah.
They were, as Sarah and Rivka, they were living off.
Yes.
And I think, I seem to remember somewhere about them having some knowledge of, Leah knows.
In the Midrash, about how many children they'll have and so forth, yeah.
And they understand the divine plan, whereas Yaakov does not know the divine plan.
Mm-hmm.
And they know the divine plan can only happen with the two of them working together.
So, I'm gonna stop you there.
Leah doesn't hate Rachel.
Right.
I mean, it's not a good relationship, but she doesn't hate.
So it's a good point. I'm going to stop you there because of, well, because we have only 7 minutes, and also because it's going to, what you're saying is going to fit in very well with what we're going to say in our last source. So Shana, and then I'm going to...
Just on the question of having children being a sign of God's favor, we see that explicitly with Hagar and Sarah. Yeah. Since Hagar has a child, she says, well, you think you're so righteous.
Right.
Me, I'm the one with the kid.
Right. And if you go back to what we said the first week, I think I brought from Hammurabi, that wasn't a Jewish idea uniquely. We had the text of Hammurabi in which they described what happens if a woman gives her maid to her husband, and then the maid has children, and then she becomes arrogant, and what are the rules for dealing with her. This wasn't unique to us. The idea that it shows I must be better is a common idea. And I don't want to go into it now. There's a lot to say about that idea, and it won't do it justice at this point. But to summarize what we have so far, our problem is the description of Leah as being hated, when on the other hand we were told she was just less loved than Jacob. The fact that blaming her doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, given that this was Laban's manipulation. And we have a hard time believing that the Torah would have shamed her in this way. And the text isn't clear that it's Jacob in the first place. So the answer is, that we've given is either she wasn't hated at all, or she was hated by others, or she was hated by Jacob for being right, and that God has defeated all three of these statements. But one follow-up from a story that happens in between the first few sources and source number 5, while they're still in the house of Laban. Reuven is the oldest son of Leah. Reuven went during the wheat harvest, and he found mandrakes in the field. And the mandrake is just the best known translation for dudaim. It doesn't really mean mandrakes, but it's some kind of a flower that, we are taught by tradition, was associated with fertility. So Reuven finds mandrakes in the field, and he brought them to his mother Leah. And Rachel said to Leah, please give me from... Oops, that should say son, not daughter. I don't know what I was thinking. Please give me from your son's mandrakes. I would like the mandrakes, right? Why does she want it? At this stage, she does not have children. And Leah said to her, is it a small thing that you took my husband, and now you will take my son's mandrakes? And Rachel said, therefore he will lie with you tonight in exchange for your son's mandrakes. The whole end of this is its own discussion, but I wanted to focus on what Leah said to her. Hama'at kachdeches ishi. Is it a small thing that you took my husband? Hello. Yeah. Yeah. Did you not read the previous chapter, Leah? You took her husband. But that's not the way Leah views it. That's not the way Leah sees it. Leah believes that she is Jacob's rightful wife. And she is the first one chronologically, but she believes that she is the rightful wife. And I think that's really important in understanding this dynamic between them. Leah does not see herself as having cheated her way into marriage with Jacob. In her mind, much the same as I said before regarding Jacob and the blessings, God arranged it that it should end up the way it's supposed to be. I am destined to marry Jacob, and that's the way it has played out. And Rachel has usurped my position because she came into the house and she's more beloved than I am. And now, even though I've had all of these children, my husband is still not favoring me because of her. And what's fascinating is, following this through, that Rachel's response is not to say, who are you kidding? Right? Rachel's response is not to say, he's my husband. She doesn't argue the point. And that's why I said to Moish, wait for this line. Rachel doesn't, it's not kind of, I think it's supporting what Moish is suggesting. That Rachel doesn't say, he's not your husband, he's my husband. And instead, she says, he's going to be in your tent tonight. Sorry? She acknowledges it. She acknowledges Leah's claim. I think that's a very important point.
No, she wants the mandrake.
Rachel's not a fighter? The one who stole the truffin last week?
Yes.
I think Rachel knows how to fight when she wants to.
But she just wants the mandrakes, so she said, okay, you...
So maybe, right, you could read it and say she just wants the mandrakes, and if you have to go with Leia in order to do that, then fine. You could read it that way. But I think there's a lot going on within this, and I wanted to make sure to point that out. Thank you so much for participating in this series.